number of years ago. And so what we were was the go-to place for families that were migrating from the plantations, from the rural part of America, into the cities looking for jobs and schools and houses for families. And so we, you know, carried that mission for many years, but also we remain viable because we still are located in the poorest part of town. So we still serve low-income families. And so our mission, transitioning to our mission, it is to address advance the economic conditions of families. That's why we talk about advancing equity. And we talk about advancing equity. Our mission is through the empowerment of children and adults. And we do that through...
Hold on, Mr. Fields. Didn't mean to interrupt. We have to break for a station identification.
Sure.
1240 AM, 101.9 FM, WLLV Louisville.
W270CR Louisville.
All right, all right. And I'm blessed and honored to be here at WLLV. Yeah, thank you for that break. So, yeah, the mission, again, advancing equity through empowerment of children and families. And we do that strategically through direct services to families from early child development. We do have a university child development center that's now well over 50 years of providing quality state regulated early education. We're serving birth to five. The most fragile citizens in our community are being served by us. Birth to five. We've got over 50 enrolled now over at Miniversity. I'm very proud of the leadership of Antoinette Gray there. And the whole team. You've got a great team at Miniversity and a growing team. And so quality early child development is part of our strategic plan. School-age youth programs. We have signature programs, the Kids Arts Academy, Teen Leadership Council, Academic Coaching Initiative. Those are things that we want to do to help school-age kids be successful. And we define success with kids by being successful at home, you know, doing what the parents want them to do, making parents proud, being successful in school, that's getting the grades, matriculating from grade level to grade level, achieving, learning, scoring well, getting good grades and so forth, and then success in the community. That's where we strive to help kids become leaders and knowing how to be servants. We invest in leadership in exchange for community service project. That's what our Teen Leadership Council is about. And so that's in a nutshell. We work with kids year-round in the school year as well as in the summer. And then our third direct service component is adult services, like to say adult economic mobility, where we work with families. And we've coined a new tag, E to the fifth. That's economic empowerment through education, employment, and entrepreneurship. And Zabir Perior is carrying that charge well. And we work with families, adults, and we got the Business Intelligence Center. That's a new innovation for us. Herbert is bringing capacity to that, working with a great number of partners, the SBAs, SBDCs, the Rotary Club, SCORE, Louisville Metro Government, PNC Bank. I mean, there's just a wealth of partners that we offer, and you hear about that every week when we come on this show. And so those are just the highlights of the mission and the vision. The vision is to be an anchor institution that co-creates vibrant conditions for children and families to thrive. And we say that economically, academically, artistically, you know, we want to make sure that everybody thrives in our community. That's our vision, our values. We value leadership. And the values of leadership is not about a title. It's not about, you know, he's a leader because he's a CEO. No, he's a leader because he takes leadership actions. He gets stuff done. And he helps to influence other people to carry out a mission. And that's what leaders do. Solve problems, address problems, help things get better, not worse, not help things just stay the same. You know, if you're going to have a status quo mentality where you good the way things are, then you may as well pass on the leadership responsibility to somebody else, because leaders have to create change. And so, and if you're in a situation where change is needed, you got to be the one that's about it. So don't talk about being a leader, be a leader. And so that's what, and I emphasize it that way because that's our values. That's what we value. And not only do we want to carry it out, we want to see it in others. We want to inspire it in others. And that's why it's a value. So, I've touched on the notable programs and successes, but I do want to say that we still have a ways to go. We've had success for 75 years, but we still have challenges. But I'll stop there because I don't think you've asked me that question.
No, sir. in fact, that was my next question. That I was going to ask, but you went over like the notable programs and success stories, and I was going to get to what are the challenges that LCCC had experienced under your leadership as president and CEO.
Well, the challenges are real, and they come from many fronts. One, your challenge just being addressing the needs of economically disadvantaged children and adults. We have to be a trauma-informed provider, because when you're economically stressed, you're stressed. Stress leads to all kinds of issues. So the working with clientele, and we're blessed that we don't have a lot of problems per se, because we try to set the tone by how we live and how we walk. But and people see that and they observe it. If we were stressed, then we'd have people venting their frustrations and their stresses to us. But the challenges from a CEO standpoint are primarily raising money, paying the bills, keeping everything going financially is a real challenge. And that's part of the reason why you look so hard at these issues like this RFP, RFA process, city government, and why we're so adamant about it is, when the Congress authorized those dollars, they had organizations like us in mind. If you read the authorizing legislation, they're talking about racial equity, that's us. They're talking about economic distress, that's us. They're talking about people that were impacted by the pandemic, that's us. Well, it ain't just us, but it's us. We on that list. So to get excluded while others get over is a problem for us. So raising money is a challenge. Certainly rebounding from the pandemic, and that's a global challenge for everybody. We're still always fighting to get over. I mean, there's organizations that just did not survive. They just flat had to shut down their business or shut their operation down because they just not. We weathered a storm, and trust me, I'll tell this story. I have said this publicly before. When the pandemic hit in 2020, we were in the midst of our fundraising season, right in the midst of it. And we had about 8 weeks worth of capital. And then the world stopped. And so we could have easily died. We could have easily flatlined right there, right? But thank God for pandemic relief, thank God for philanthropy that stepped up in a different way than they had. And we survived it. We weathered it. But we didn't get it laying down. It took a lot of work to get it done. It took an exorbitant amount of work to get it done. I was up around the clock. Yeah, we were, what you say when you can't be around people? We couldn't be around people, but we were working on a computer almost 24/7. Look for this, look for that. and doing programs virtually. We worked, but those are the kinds of challenges that small community-based nonprofits face all the time. It's not just LCCC. All of us face it. I know I'm speaking to the choir if you're listening to this as a nonprofit. We all go through this nationally as well as locally. You know, we were part of a national network called, it was the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities. Now it's called Social Current. And they published a report a number of years ago talking about, the headwinds, the north winds that are, or headwinds that nonprofits face and that many are closing their doors, lack of funding, cuts here, cuts there. And so, I get impassioned about it. You can tell because that's the world I live in, and it's the life I live. And it's you got to be strong and resilient to overcome and to withstand these challenges. And you got to be prayerful. You know, you have to be extremely close to God to be successful. Because ultimately, and this is where faith comes in. I know we're successful because we're doing God's work. And so that's how we withstand these challenges.
All right, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much for the information about your personal and professional background, as well as professional credentials and experience, as well as LCCC. And if you don't mind, let's move back to the Metro Ethic Hearing complaint. And I want to ask a question about what motivated you to file the ethic complaint against Councilman Anthony Piagentini.
Yeah, Piagentini. I shared some of it before. What motivated me to file the complaint was that I had my frustrations were already at a high level. Frustrations had mounted over several months because in my instinct, because of my professional experience, I knew that something wasn't right with that process. And whenever I asked questions about it, I wasn't getting answers that were satisfactory. But I'm not a quitter, and so I wasn't going to lay down. I continued to persist for several months, and it wasn't until they actually awarded the grant that, you know, as a leader, I had to move my mindset into other spaces, but I was still frustrated. So what motivated me was the frustration, and the opportunity became when I read the article about Mr. Piagentini accepting a job with the Healthcare CEO Council. That became an opportunity. And because there is a code of ethics, there are rules that he and others must follow in order to be compliant with the rules. And I sensed based on that notice that he had at least to be questioned. There was enough suspicion. There was a reasonable suspicion well enough to justify filing the complaint, because what the complaint does is it opens up an investigation. And because of that, there became an investigation, and it was a bipartisan investigation. And you notice in this whole conversation, I hadn't said anything about politics, because this is not motivated from my standpoint about politics at all. But I will say it was a bipartisan, the Ethics Commission is represented by Democrats and Republicans. Our investigator is a Republican who did his own independent investigation. He interviewed people before there became a hearing. And so that's what motivated me, was having an opportunity to seek truth, to seek facts, and ultimately to get justice.
All right. Thank you. And another question. I think you just answered my next question. Can you outline the specific incident, complaint, or action that led you to take this step against Councilman Anthony P. Argentini?
Yeah, well, I did cover that. I filed a complaint, and this is for our listening audience to understand. And this is what good citizenship looks like. And I say that because I was thanked by some very significant people in our community and was deemed to be exercising great citizenship. And the process was to look at the code of ethics. It's all available online. Look for the complaint process. Guess what? It's all available online. So I went online, read the code, went online. I downloaded the form. It was a real simple form to fill out. I put in about two or three sentences that justified why I was raising a complaint. And I attached a copy of the article that I had read that was representative of why I had a suspicion. And that was it. That triggered the process. From there, I will say the ethics, code of ethics does allow a complainant to have access to legal representation. I had a great attorney. The ethics code finances that attorney. Kent Wicker did a phenomenal job of addressing my complaint, doing a thorough investigation, which led to seven infractions that he uncovered through that investigation that had been committed by the councilman. And so that's what he was tried on. And of course, we know the results.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir. And what are your personal and professional opinions about the ethic commission policy, procedure, investigation, and hearing process?
Well, I haven't gone through it. I didn't know what to expect. I had never went through this type of I've done public hearings before. You know, I've served on the Civil Service Board. I've even conducted hearings on lesser types of things. But this was over 4 days. And I just began to respect and appreciate civility in action in our community, that there were citizens, there were great leaders, there were attorneys, there were people with high credentials that served as volunteers on this ethics commission who dedicated chunks of their lives to hear this testimony. And then multiple weeks of deliberating, and then to render a 50-plus page report. It left a lot to admire. And I just say that because I don't advocate anybody going up and making any frivolous complaints, because that can be wasteful and it can end up making you look bad versus anybody else. But if there is a credible issue, is people should find confidence in knowing that we have a ethics commission that is committed to seeking justice on behalf of citizens. And that's what that commission is there for. So just having gone through that process, like you say all the time, Brother Vince, nothing but love for those folks.
I have nothing but love for you.
Yeah, I like that.
Amen. And, well, did you find the investigation and hearing process fair and transparent? Why or why not?
Absolutely fair. Everybody had ample time. Nobody was rushed. Objective. Mr. Biancettini had representation. His attorney was outstanding in representing him. I had representation. My attorney was outstanding in representing me. And it was just a credible process. transparent in the sense that it was open to the public. Anybody who wanted to come in and sit there and watch it. The media was there recording it. There is a transcription of all the proceedings that any citizen can get. If you want to, you know, listen to hours of the testimony in its original form, it's available to the public. I don't think you get any more transparent than that. The report is out there on the website for anybody to read. And so there's no reason why people can't have the actual facts of the matter at their disposal.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir. Now, how do you feel about the Ethic Commission final ruling in the case against Councilman P. Ajitini?
I think the report is so clear. I think we heard Mayor Greenberg say it was clear. It was credible. He was presented with 7 infractions that were violations of the Code of Ethics. He was found guilty on 6 of those. And the evidence as to why he was found guilty is contained in the report. It's a good process. It's a good report. Now we know that in the court of public opinion that people can read the same thing and draw a different outcome, you know, in terms of how they think about the matter, depending on what their frame of reference is and depending on what their affiliations are and their relationships are and depending on a lot of factors. But, the report is the report. Not only the court of public opinion, but there's also the court system that this probably will gravitate to the next level. There's also the Metro Council, because the commission, not only did they find him guilty, they also recommended that he be removed from the Metro Council. They don't have the authority to remove him, but they can recommend it, and they did. And so the Metro Council has to make that decision, which means that they may have to go through their own investigation, their own hearing process, their own deliberation. And so I don't think we've heard the last of this matter, but I don't know where it ends. I will insert this other fact, and this is going back to the facts because it did come up in the testimony. There are the reason why this is critical for Louisville as a city. This is Louisville as a city. The reputation is on the hook. These funds, this American Rescue Plan fund, is a federal fund, and there's a federal contract between the U.S. Department of Treasury and Louisville Metro government, and there's rules in which that contract needs to follow. And when those rules are violated, then it's not P. Ajitini that's on the hot seat. It's not the Metro Council that's on the hot seat. It's Louisville Metro government. And that goes from the mayor's office on down. And so the report has to be able to withstand all that additional scrutiny is all I'm getting at. And the report is not only going to be looked at by me and others and Pierre Argentini and whoever else wants to read it, but the federal government's likely to look at the report. And then they're going to draw their own conclusions, their own independent conclusions. And we don't know. I guess we got to wait and see what that becomes.
All right. So were you satisfied with the outcome, and do you believe justice was served?
That's a great question. I am the outcome is not fully what I want to see, and the reason why I filed a complaint to begin with. I do feel affirmed. I think there were, I said to my board, this is not something to, it's not a celebration. It's not something to celebrate. from my standpoint. I'm not trying to celebrate this. But I do feel, while it's not a celebration, it is an affirmation. It is, you're acting on your instinct, you're trusting God, and you're doing things. And then when this process affirms that, then that just God saying to you, thank you for doing what I wanted you to do. But the full satisfaction comes in knowing that there's integrity in the process. This is, Brother Vince, Brother Herbert, this is my profession that I want to protect as a public administrator. And the public administration is about ethics. It's about integrity. And it's about trying your best to do right by constituents, all constituents. You can't solve all the problems, but you can do your absolute best toward trying to do right. And to have people in places that don't respect that is a problem. And so we need to address that. And I think, you know, there's still some things that need to be done. I think Mayor Greenberg did take some swift action when he made some announcements on Friday after the ethics ruling. But I want the mayor to understand the full implications of even what he said, because it's all about integrity and ethical administration that can withstand scrutiny. And that's the litmus test to ethics, is will it withstand scrutiny? Because what you learn about public administration, and I learned this early in my career when I worked at the Housing Authority, the executive director, Andrea Duncan. Shout out to Miss Andrea Duncan. She had a framed picture, I think it was a newspaper article, of herself and her wall in her office that talked about operating in a fishbowl. And that's what it is in public administration. You operate in a fishbowl. People's always going to be looking at what you're doing and what you're not doing. And so ethical behavior means you got to be able to withstand the scrutiny that you're going to inevitably get. There's going to be people that observe what you do and going to have something to complain about. But can you and your behavior withstand that scrutiny? And if you can't, then that's what? That's unethical. You know, ethics means being honorable, you know, being worthy, being respectful, being trustworthy, you know, and telling the truth. You know, there's a lot of things to be said about that trial that showed that this councilman wasn't necessarily about the truth. He was about what benefited him. And so, because he couldn't admit to anything. You know, if you're going to tell the truth, even if you're wrong, you got to admit it if you're going to be about the truth. So these are values that public administrators have to have, and it's important.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask another question. This is a two-part question, if you don't mind, sir. How do you believe this decision will benefit you personally and professionally, as well as benefit to LCCC?
Well, I don't expect that it's going to benefit me personally, because I'm not looking to make a dime on this personally. If there is a personal benefit, is things that I believe can be expressed in ways that hopefully raise awareness more about who I am and what I represent and, you know, what my journey is about. And, you know, if you ever had any questions or doubts about Kevin Fields, hopefully you can learn more through this process about me. That's only the personal benefit that I see. LCCC, the benefit that I hope for LCCC is that when we put our best foot forward, because I didn't share this fact. Let me share this fact. In the scoring rubric for the RFA, I mentioned there were 30 applications from top to bottom. And I'm not going to get into the detail, but I will publish on the website the scoring rubric so everybody can see it and read it from top to bottom. But I can say this, the Healthcare CEO Council out of 30 was number 29 out of 30. But yet they got awarded $40 million. Yeah, the mayor took it back, but still they got awarded $40 million. LCCC was in the top 10. We were number 9 on the list. We weren't the best, but we were credible. And there were 30 organizations. There were a lot of organizations that you hear about on the news every other day that were lower than us, significantly lower than us. And so what I hope for LCCC, coming back to your question, is that when we put our best foot forward, it needs to be respected, trusted, and not just dismissed. Because what that looks like for us, for LCCC, that's disrespect. That's professional disrespect. You're going to give us a score, but yet ignore it like it didn't exist. So what I hope for us is that we get access to integrity. And then if we win, you know, we've taken enough losses. We know how to take losses, but we need some victories. We need a lot more victories. And we know that we can be competitive. We know we among the best, not only in this community, in this nation, at what we do. I know that because I've had a chance to work with colleagues in my profession from around this country. And I know I benchmark against all of them, any of them that I've ever worked with. And I'm not trying to compete, but I just know that from a professional experience and expertise perspective. So that's it.
So you just said, we win, you know, we win. So if that's the case, then how do you foresee this decision benefiting the local Black community and the larger community in Louisville?
Well, again, I think all of us, and that's a great question, because here's what happens to the Black community in these kinds of situations. And I'm just going to call it like I see it. The white power structure, which is a predominant power structure in this community, knows how to play us like a cheap suit, right? And what I mean by that is they work on the political side and they pick a few of us that they think are representative enough of the Black community, and they let them be in the in crowd. They get their slice, and the Black community should be happy as long as they get their piece. And so the larger Black community don't benefit from that if the same select few. And so when you ask the question, how does this benefit the Black community? If everything's going to be based on integrity, everybody should have a fair shot, because everybody should be about doing their best. I believe that. I'm encouraging that for everybody. I don't care who you are. If you do your best, it ought to be recognized, and it shouldn't be discounted if you ain't one of the in crowd. And so this is about, yeah, the Black community needs to, yeah, understand that. That's a real issue.
So you were just saying that, you know, the decision, positive decision, and, you know, what lesson can that decision bring about in the community? What positive changes, you know, can this decision bring about in the community?
Should come out of it is more empowerment in the Black community. More empowerment. And I put my engineering hat on for a second. Let's do the math. I ain't gonna have the answer to this question, to this problem that I'm gonna set up. But I'll set it up, and then we'll figure out the answer to it later. Let's do the math here, and let's say that was, using just the ARP as an example, that was $388 million that came from the federal government to Louisville Metro government to administer in the community. And it had rules attached to it. Some of the rules were deal with poverty, deal with the impact of COVID, that was the preamble, but also deal with racial equity, You know what that is, right? How do you deal with racial equity? And you see, that's a fundamental question. How do you deal with racial equity? I got a belief system on that. But I'm going to stay on the math problem. I'm not going to get to the politics yet. The question is, look at how that money was distributed and account for it based on, does it empower the black community or does it empower other groups? And ultimately, what you mean by empowerment is, whose pocket does the money end up in? Whose pocket does that money end up in? Whose households are enriched by that investment? And I ask my black brothers and sisters that are listening, how many of you can say that you have seen an economic benefit from that $388 million? Did you get a job? Did you get access to something that led to getting some of that cheese? Or not? Because ultimately, that's what the politics is all about, is who gets the money, who ends up getting the money. And so how we get played like a cheap suit is, well, let's bring some programs into the black community and let's help them this, help them that. Well, that ain't empowering nobody, not economically, maybe educationally, might lead you to something if you can learn something and go do something with it. But we're talking about economic empowerment. Now, I'm advocating from an institutional standpoint. And I'd say that same question to the black institutions, black-led institutions. How many of you can say you actually got a slice of that cheese? And so, yeah, that's the real thing that you want to see for the black community, is there has to be more economic empowerment. And the politics should not hijack this. You know, let me just take this little tangent. I'm over at Spalding working on my doctorate degree at my age, Herbert, believe it or not. And it's all about public policy and effective public policy. And one concept that I've studied about is the influence of political elitism. People who are the most elite, most influential political figures, and who do they represent? Whose interests do they represent? So Mr. Piagentini, his allegiance was to this healthcare CEO council. Well, who are they? Who are they? Well, they are the leaders of all the major health institutions in this community, from Norton to Baptist to Humana to you name them all. And we had a chance at Rotary to hear from the leadership and learned that they were a $140 billion industry. So they ain't hurting for no money. They may have problems with workforce, but they don't have money problems. So these are issues that if they're going to get a $40 million grant, and yeah, they have some black organizations that are partnering with them, and I love them, each one of them, from the Urban League to AMP to United Way, U of L. And so they got organizations that are partnering with them, but I'm talking to the masses when I say, how many other organizations that are black led or that even aimed as a black mission that got empowered by that ARPA money? And so that's ultimately what's at on trial here.
All right, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Very powerful. And what key lessons have you personally learned from this Metro Ethic hearing, and what lessons do you think our community can take away from this?
Well, I think the lesson is have belief, trust God, have belief, gotta believe that if you are committed to a purpose, and it's a purpose about helping fellow man, helping community, then there is opportunity for help, and there is justice whenever you experience something that works against your purpose. And so, got to believe, got to trust, but you also got to be engaged. And I learned personally that, yeah, it don't take a lot of time to initiate a process if you got the right objective, the right evidence, and you take the right approach.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And do you believe you did the right thing by filing the complaint?
Yes.
Okay. If so, then what makes you confident in your decision?
I think, as I said earlier, the outcome is an affirmation that I did the right thing, just the outcome itself. But also, I'll say this, and I hope they don't mind me calling them out. I had two previous mayors personally thank me for taking action. Two previous mayors. And I'm going to call them out because I count them as friends. Jerry Abramson. We all know Mayor Abramson. Then he referred to him as Mayor for Life. Personally thanked me. Mayor Greg Fisher, who was the administrator of this whole process. All this stuff happened after his term. Personally thanked me on more than one occasion. And so the ruling itself is an affirmation. And then when other people say thank you, and the list goes on. I've had many people to say thanks. Although I know there's other people that probably wish I had never did it or think that I had another motive or think that I'm trying to make other people look bad or feel bad. I'm not that kind of guy, but yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Now, how has this hearing impacted your perception of civic responsibility?
Yeah, it just deepens it. We all have civic responsibility. We all are citizens, and there are the laws of the land are here for all of us. This is a democracy. Every citizen counts, and everybody has a voice. Sometimes you need help and advice. I just happen to have expertise in this space, and that helped me a lot. But everybody should feel some confidence that there's power in being civically engaged.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Is there anything else you would like to share regarding this matter?
You know, I do want to say that as a part of this broadcast, information is going to be available to our listening audience. And there are some articles, the report, scoring sheet, things that came out of the investigation that will be a part of this public discourse. And I just want people to know that if you have any questions for me, I'm accessible. And so I don't want to be bombarded, but I will facilitate questions. And I think with that, Brother Vince, we got a few minutes left. If you want to see if you got any callers that have questions or comments, or anybody else in the studio have questions or comments.
And the call-in line is 502-571-1240. And I was going to say that what message would you like to tell the community in light of this experience?
Well, I know that this experience is not, you know, at an end. There's still procedures that are underway. And I know we have Mr. Piagentini on his side is pledged that he's going to fight the ruling. So there will be some procedural matters to address his appeals and so forth. The Metro Council has to act on it. And so I think the message is be informed, be fully informed, but more importantly, if you care, only if you care, be engaged. And if you're engaged, that means, you know, when you have Metro Council meetings, You don't have to go downtown to participate. They're online. You can watch them online. You can write to your council reps. I think community engagement is important on this matter. I think the council needs to hear from our community on this matter, no matter what side you fall on. They need to hear, because they're going to have to make a hard decision about whether or not they keep Mr. Piagentini. That's one thing. More importantly, they got to make hard decisions about how they legislate. And, you know, are they going to be about integrity? Are they going to be about keeping the rules? Are they going to be about just doing whatever they think they want to do, which was one of the things that we heard from Mr. Piagentini in his testimony. I'll quote him, "We could do whatever you want to do." And so community engagement is important, and that would be my final message. I will respond to questions. Again, as Brother Ben said, brothers and sisters, if you're listening, if you have any questions or comments, you can call into the studio. You know the number here, 502-571-1240. But that said, I do appreciate the opportunity to share this testimony, and we will be here next week on this show with another episode of Russell on the Move. Next couple of weeks, got some exciting guests coming into the studio. We will be hearing from Dr. Geneva Starks Price next week, who heads up the I forget the name of the School of Educational Excellence out at U of L, that division. She heads it up. She'll be in the studio. We'll be talking about education next week, post-secondary education, and some of the opportunities there and some of the challenges there, and how that institution strives to be engaged in community affairs. And then the week after that, we're going to have fun in the studio leading up to the induction of our dear brother, Daryl Drake, into the WKU Athletic Hall of Fame. That's going to be our show on November the 9th. And that's going to be a big show, big show, big show. We're going to have people far and wide, near and dear, coming in and reflecting on the life of Daryl Drake. We're very proud of him. Yeah, give him a hand, because he's Louisville born and bred. And he went on from here to WKU, just like Herb and I did. And we were down on the hill together. We were buzzards running together. And he was an athlete, played football. He coached at WKU. He coached college, Division I, Georgia, University of Georgia, University of Texas. Then he coached in the pros, Chicago Bears, Arizona Cardinals, Pittsburgh Steelers. He's no longer with us, but he has been inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame at Western Kentucky. And we're going to be talking to his brother. I talked to his brother the other day, Herbert.
Derek.
Yeah, I talked to Derek, his brother. We know him as Big Wally. And he's going to be calling in as well. And certainly Clarence Glover. Clarence Glover, who is we all know is a legend in the history of Western Kentucky University. He's very instrumental in this decision for Daryl's induction. He's going to call in to the studio as well. And Reverend Mark Hill, we're expecting him in the studio with us. We're going to have a brotherhood day that day. But I'm just suggesting that, you know, let's go. There's more to come. The journey continues with Russell on the Move. We won't dwell on this particular ethics trial unless we are called upon to do so. But the lines are open if there's any questions or comments. If you want to know more from me, I'm willing to answer questions. And the whole purpose of today's show is to weigh in on the facts and to let the community know that what you see on TV and what you read in the newspaper is just a tip of an iceberg at best when it comes to information. And there's an ocean of information that is available if you really want to know what drives this. And why it's important, not just because of this particular incident, is these kinds of matters go on all the time in city government, state government, federal government. They go on all the time. And so citizens, if you want to be a good citizen, be engaged, be informed, be involved, and help create positive change in your community. Herbert, any thoughts from you?
My thought would be, I'm just sitting here just as proud as I could be, man, to hear, your perspective on this situation. And, me, you and I go back a number of years. Don't want to say how many years, but a number of years. But I appreciate you sharing your experience, Kevin, as far as, everything that you've done in your career. And, the community is very, very blessed to have, like I always say, the education, the vaccine to the community issue. So, I think you educated the community on, the ethics situation. And I just thank God that we have an opportunity to hear from your voice in regards to that.
Thank you, Herb. Thank you. There's a lot more that I could say about this, but I prayed at the beginning that God would limit my remarks to what would please him. And other than that, I'll respond to any questions. Brother Vince, any other final thoughts, questions from you?
No, sir. It was just very insightful how the case came about and what we can learn from that case. And I said no, but I have something. It's like, if you're doing something wrong and you should be called out on it. And it's like you said earlier, we're not pointing fingers. We're not pointing fingers. We're coming at you in a loving way. So if you're wrong, you just wrong. Let's deal with it. Let's love one another and let's move on.
Amen. Amen. And you're right. That's the note we want to end on, because it is all about loving and sharing and caring. And that's my message to the mayor Greenberg, who inherited this situation. He inherited a lot, but that's what he signed up for. That's what he got voted in for. As mayor, there's a lot that goes into running a city. The good, the bad, and the ugly comes with it. But in this particular case, he was put in a position where he had to make, or still has to make, some decisions. And so, to your point, Vince, and I've said this to his team, I'm here to help. I want to be a voice of help to the mayor as he goes through these decisions. But I also want him to understand how committed I am to my profession. And I'm not going to let nobody, him, anybody that gets in the way of what I think is right for us as a community, us as an organization, us as people, because that's my DNA. That's what I've been built to do. That's the purpose that I'm here for, to serve. All right. So we're going to do we have a call, brother? Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show. We don't need to prolong it anymore. I do want to say thanks to WLV. Thanks to Brother Archie Dale, who entrusted me with an extra time space and approved this 2-hour special edition of Russell on the Move. Thanks to Brother Archie. I want to thank Brother Bill Price for working with me and helping to organize this session, this segment, and appreciate him. And also thank you, Brother Vince Grace, who served this community well as our moderator today. And thank you for the questions, Brother Vince. I appreciate that. And thank you for what you do week in and week out, not only for this show, but for everybody, if you're a fan of WLLV, you got to be a fan of Vince Graves. Project Purvis, and everybody, Ron Jones, everybody who's a part of this.
And Harry Johnson.
And Herbert L. I was going to get to him, too, because that's, you know, there's a little inside joke, Herbert. I don't know if you heard it, but they call you the Ed McMahon of Russell on the Move. Had you heard that?
Ed McMahon, I ain't heard it yet.
Yeah, so. So
that's all right.
Yeah, I appreciate Herbert. Me, like he say, he and I ride or die. We've been riding or dying together for 50 years plus, and still committed to that partnership. All right, we're going to sign off with that. To our listening audience, thank you for enduring this time slot with us today. We will be back next week, and until then, stay blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
Get involved in an incredible month of empowerment and change. October is Economic Mobility Month at LCCC's phenomenal Old Walnut Street campus. Networking opportunities for suppliers, contractors, consultants, and other businesses will be plentiful. October 17th, this is all about unity. Attend the El Salvador Friendship Exchange presented by the Rotary Club of Louisville from 2 to 3:30 p.m. Don't miss the main event on October 20th, the West Louisville's Economic Mobility Summit. Join us for the Empty Pantry State of Food Insecurity from 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Also, on the evening of October 20th, LCCC and Friends will be presented by the 3rd Annual Sam Watkins Jr. Light the Way. Entrepreneurial Excellence Awards from 4:30 to 6 p.m. 6 Impact Black entrepreneurs in our community will be honored and celebrate for their achievements. This is not all. We'll be recognizing excellence again on October the 24th with celebration of the West Louisville Trailblazers Awards presented by the Louisville Independent Business Alliance from 4 to 7:30 p.m. That's more resources galore. If you're an entrepreneur or business owner looking for funding options, join us October the 25th for the SBA Funding Options and Resources Workshop at the Old Walnut Plaza Business Intelligence Center from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Cap off Economic Mobility Month on October the 27th with Sufficiency Fair presented by New Directions Housing Corp from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. These all takes places at Old Walnut Street, 1300 West Muhammad Ali Boulevard. For more information and to stay updated for all these events, please visit lcccnews.org. Join us this October at Old Walnut Street, and everybody deserves a chance to rise.
Louisville Central Community Centers is celebrating 75 years of service to the community. LCCC is officially announcing the 75-year challenge and pledge. Join in the celebration and pledge your support by donating $75 today. Your donation goes directly to support the families we serve daily. Mail your donations to LCCC, 1300 West Muhammad Ali, 40203, call 502-853-8821, or log on to LCCCnews.org.
Are you ready to make a real impact in your community? Look no further than AmeriCorps Vista's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project at LCCC. Become a Vista Community Impact Ambassador. Become a catalyst for positive change. Picture yourself working hand-in-hand with local leaders, organizations, and residents to empower the Russell neighborhood. As a Vista volunteer, you'll play a vital role in creating lasting solutions to address poverty and inequality. Your dedication will help build a stronger, more vibrant community for everyone. Make a difference, make connections, and make memories that will last a lifetime. Join the AmeriCorps Vista team at LCCC's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project today. Visit our website at lcccnews.org. to learn more and apply. Be the change you want to see in the world. Become AmeriCorps Vista Community Impact Ambassador, where your passions meet action.